This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. They were considered some of the brightest minds in law and mental health. For 2 years, they worked to understand, then recommend necessary improvements to Virginia's mental health system. But more than 4 years after the Commission on Mental Health Law Reform issued its report, much remains to be done, especially for children. When it comes to treating kids with mental illness, advocates of reform say the changes thereafter would not only dramatically improve treatment, helping thousands of families across the Commonwealth, but the improvements they seek could actually end up costing taxpayers less money. Once again, with a General Assembly session in progress, those recommendations are being considered. We take a look at just what they are and why they could be important to all Virginians right after the news. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. If you saw a child in pain, and you knew you could help end that pain, would you want to? If the illness the child suffered also deeply affected every member of his or her family, would that make you want to help even more? What if you then learned that across Virginia there were thousands of such children and families who could be helped but weren't getting that help? And finally, what if you were told that if a government-run system now in place could not only be improved so that thousands of such children and families would get help, but the end result would actually call for less government spending? Well, those are the kind of questions that advocates for improving mental health services to children have been asking across Virginia. We have two of those advocates here with us, and we're planning to also connect with parents and lawmakers concerned about these issues later in the hour. But if you want to connect with us, you can reach us by phone at 888-WMRA-TALK or online at the Virginia Insight Facebook page. Charlotte McNulty has only recently retired from her post as head of the Virginia Office of Comprehensive Services for At-Risk Children and Youth. Before that, she headed up the Harrisonburg-Rockingham Community Services Board. She also was a member of the Virginia Commission for the Mental Health Law Reform. Ms. McNulty, welcome back to the Insight Studios.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Also with us, the former chair of a Richmond Area Community Services Board, who now serves as policy director for the group Voices for Virginia's Children, as well as coordinator of the Campaign for Children's Mental Health, Margaret Nimmo Crowe. Good to see you again.
Hi, Tom. Thanks.
Well, Margaret, state lawmakers are in session right now. What is it that you want them to do about children's mental health?
Well, we have been asking them ever since session started, well, really a long time before that, but have intensified our efforts during session. We're asking for approximately $19 million to help fund two different types of children's mental health treatment that is currently unavailable in most of Virginia. We're asking for funding for crisis response services in communities. These are mobile crisis teams and crisis stabilization units or houses that are in communities that can respond to a child in a psychiatric crisis, whether that occurs at school or in their homes or in a juvenile detention center. And it can often, because of the level of intervention, it can keep that child out of a hospital. So that's the first thing we're asking for. The second is we're asking for funding to start demonstration projects of child psychiatry. Currently, there is a many weeks long waiting list to see a child psychiatrist in most parts of the state. And obviously, if you're in a psychiatric crisis and you're waiting to see a psychiatrist and you have to go weeks or even months, probably your level of functioning is going to go down and you may end up in a worse place than you were before when you first sought out the appointment. And so we're trying to alleviate that by hiring a child psychiatrist in each region of the state who will do two things. They will first provide some direct service to kids, so they're going to help address that waiting list issue. And some of that will be through telemedicine. We can actually do psychiatry through the use of technology so they don't have to be in the same place physically. But another really important component of that is that the psychiatrist will help educate pediatricians, nurses, and other frontline children's health workers who currently don't have a lot of background in children's mental health but end up treating kids because of the shortage of specialists.
And we, when we did the Commission for Mental Health Law Reform report in 2008, both of these items were among many recommendations for children and families. And you mentioned that I was the executive director of the local mental health, public mental health system.
And we should point out, Community Service Board is the agency, and there are, what, something like 50 of them across the
state?
There
are 40.
That they're basically the regional agency that manage government services for mental health at the local level.
That's correct.
Okay, and you were in charge of that agency for Harrisonburg and Rockingham County.
That's correct. And the law that governs community services boards does not provide any specific information related to children and families. In fact, there are only two services that are required under the law, which is emergency services and case management, if the resources are available. And so the needs of the population are so much greater than what the law stipulates. And the commission report suggested that we expand the requirements under that law to include services that that the General Assembly is considering now, among many other services that are needed for children and families and adults.
Well, and Tom, these have been the recommendations for as long as I can remember. Charlotte and I have both sat on innumerable study commissions and task forces looking at the needs of kids' mental health. And the body of recommendations that have been developed from these commissions are all very similar.
Right.
And they all get back to one fundamental problem, which is the lack of access to treatment for kids. And it's interesting that you would think it might only affect kids who are in a lower socioeconomic strata. But really, it's kids across the board. That's one of the fascinating things about access to mental health treatment is that families who don't have insurance obviously have a very difficult time getting services. People on Medicaid, kids on Medicaid still have trouble accessing the treatment that they need. And families who have private insurance even have more trouble because private insurance covers so little of the treatment that they need. So this is really an across-the-board problem, and it's something we've been talking about for years.
For many, many years. And I mean, as I've said, this is old news. It's just we just continue to advocate for what we believe children and families need for the treatments that they require.
Absolutely.
I realize that it's old news to the two of you and to some of the other people that we're going to be talking to this hour. Not any less important because you've been saying some of the things that you are saying today over and over and over again for years, including times that you've both been on this program in the past. But for some people listening, they're going to hear some of this for the first time.
Right.
And one of the things that I think many people don't have a sense of, if they haven't heard you, Margaret Nimmo Crow, or you, Charlotte McNulty, or someone like you talk about these issues before, and they don't have someone in their own family who's dealing with these kinds of problems, just what's going on in a family and in the mind of a child who's in that family who has some sort of mental health problem.
Well, let me give you an example that might sort of help give people a picture. The types of disorders that we're talking about are serious mental health conditions, things like depression, anxiety disorder, bipolar disorder. Children who are on the autism spectrum frequently have co-occurring emotional and mental health problems. Asperger's syndrome is a sort of a high-functioning form of autism. Talked to many family members of kids who have Asperger's as well as anxiety disorders or other co-occurring mental health disorders. And the way they manifest themselves often is through aggression and temper tantrums, sometimes the manic phase of bipolar, which used to be called manic depression. The manic phase of that looks a lot like ADHD symptoms, and then at their worst, they can get violent. So kids may have temper tantrums and get violent toward teachers or their family members and be really hard for others to control. But then on the downside, there are kids who get very depressed and want to hurt themselves, hurt others in their family. So it runs the full gamut. And I think that's what's shocking to a lot of people is that children, even very young children, are able to have these very serious psychiatric diagnoses. And the earlier we can treat them, the more we can help them manage their condition and, you know, grow up to be functioning adults. Even if they continue to have this diagnosis, there is treatment available and it works.
Charlotte, have you ever talked to a child who's gone through some of these problems and reached a phase where for at least a period of time they are calm and their illness is in some degree of recession, and they've been able to talk to you about what their experience was like?
Well, yes. Actually, many children, particularly as I've gone around the state in the position from which I retired, the Office of Comprehensive Services, and they feel out of control. They don't like their behavior. They know that they are causing a significant amount of distress for themselves and other people, but do not feel as if they have the control over the management of those symptoms. And it isn't until they get the appropriate intervention that they are able to articulate what it is they've experienced and what it is they want, and that they feel so much better having gotten the treatment that they needed. And that often starts with a psychiatrist who can do a full evaluation. And that's a psychiatrist who is trained in children's mental health and has that background and knowledge.
I've interviewed a number of parents who have gotten into advocacy on this issue because a child of theirs was having a problem, and that they found that there is so little help for them. But I was really struck by a story I heard a couple of years ago of a young mom whose son at the time was 11 or 12 years old, and he'd been having problems since about the age of four. And like many children in such situations, he'd gotten all kinds of diagnoses. It seemed like they changed every 6 months since about the age of three. But he, as Margaret was saying, would sometimes go into uncontrollable rages. And his parents were afraid of what he would do to his younger siblings. But this woman that I interviewed said, and we'll call her son Brian, said, you know, Brian has come to me at points in time when he is calm and said, Mommy, I just hurt so much. I don't know what to do. And when I get so angry and I start breaking things and kicking people and screaming, I know that there's something wrong with me, and I hate myself for what's going on with me, but I don't know how to stop. Mm-hmm. You're nodding your head.
Yes,
my guess is that Brian's story is not
unusual. Right. That is I think that's probably a typical story for a child who may have beyond the autism spectrum, or may have bipolar disorder or some kind of anxiety disorder. And even depression manifests itself differently in children than it does in adults, and it can have those similar kinds of symptoms. So getting children the kinds of treatment they need as early as possible is the best way to end that pain, or at least can help them manage that pain, as well as help the families know what to do in those situations.
Margaret Nimmo-Crow from Voices for Virginia's Children, you've been an advocate on these issues for any number of years now, even before you were with the agency that you're currently working for. Help break down for us, if you would, this argument that if we provided the kinds of services for children that you're asking for, over the long term, it would actually cost taxpayers less?
Well, they're actually short-term and long-term benefits for taxpayers. And that's part of our message we've been trying to get across this session. For the crisis response services, for example, having a mobile crisis team of licensed clinicians led by a child psychiatrist who can respond 24 hours a day, 7 days a week in the home, in the school, wherever in the community, that service can actually keep a child out of an inpatient hospitalization. For instance, the Commonwealth Center in
which
Stanton
is going to cost far more to
absolutely
be in the hospital.
The average daily cost right now at the Commonwealth Center is something like $850, and kids stay there for about a week on average, sometimes longer. So right there, there's an immediate savings. And we actually have, there are very few places in Virginia that provide these mobile crisis
teams. Can you hold
teams.
That thought?
Absolutely.
Because I want to ask you more about those details. I want to also let our audience know that our phone lines are open. If you have thoughts, questions, or suggestions about improving Virginia's mental health services for children, the phone number is coming up. Here in the Virginia Insight studio with me, Margaret Nimmo Crow, who is Director of Policy at the group Voices for Virginia's Children, along with Charlotte McNulty, former Executive Director of the Virginia Office of Comprehensive Services for At-Risk Children and Youth. I'm Tom Graham, and joining us now by phone from her home in Fairfax, the parent of a 9-year-old girl who has struggled with mental health issues for, I think, at least the last 5 years, Christy Gallagher. Thank you for making time for us.
Thank you.
Tell us about what has been going on with your daughter. I know that you don't want to use her name on the air, but did she first begin to show symptoms of something going wrong when she was about 4?
Yes. Well, we've struggled off and on for, like you said, about 5 years. And we are in a good place now, but it's taken a long time. And, of course, I worry about, as she turns 10 next month, what the preteen and teen years have to come for us. But we started with the diagnosis of anxiety disorder and then ADHD, and then came with mood disorder and possibly bipolar disorder.
So again, a story of one diagnosis after another and probably different kinds of treatment and medication for each diagnosis. Can you tell us some of what was going on with your daughter that demonstrated that something was wrong?
Yes. Well, we have struggled off and on with just, you know, like lots of hyperactivity, and then we've had several bouts of insomnia, and then we have gone off and on with sorry, I'm having a few technical difficulties here.
Do you need us to call you back on your phone line? Is there a problem with your phone, Christy?
No, just each of my phones keep going out. We never use our landline, so sorry. I'm good now.
Okay.
So just insomnia, lots and lots of temper tantrums, and difficulties in school with behavior, and so that led to going to see psychiatrists.
And again, Christy, I don't want to dig too deeply into something that I know is very personal and very painful, but I also want to do the best of our ability to let people know who aren't familiar because they've never seen it, understand something more than just the titles of what families like yours deal with. So can you tell us a little bit about maybe what one of those temper tantrums was like?
Sure. Well, you know, everybody sees a temper tantrum in a child when they're ages 2, 3, and sometimes even older. But we've gone to the point where temper tantrums last from, 20 minutes to 2-3 hours. Temper tantrums where things are being thrown across the room, down the hall. It's very abusive, where I've been afraid for not only my safety, but my son's safety. She has a younger brother. And windows have been broken. She's pulled a knife out, attempting to, you know, say that she was going to kill herself. So none of this is what you would see in a normal child.
I think that's what I've heard from so many families. This is Margaret, that that you want so desperately to help your child in the middle of one of these episodes, yet you fear for your own safety, the safety of that child and any other kids who are in the home. Scary.
Yeah, and as she gets, you know, older and larger, you know, she's almost as tall as I am. She weighs 90 pounds. There's not really much I can do. I can get her up to her own room. But, I mean, there's holes in her room and her window's cracked. And, you know, there's not a safe place. And so that's why I'm such an advocate for this crisis, mobile crisis team. If there was someone I could call, I can't tell you how many times I wanted to call the police and yet feared for what the police might do.
Well, and I really think that that is a
this
real,
is Charlotte.
It is Charlotte. A typical response is to really fear for the safety of the other people in the family, not to mention the safety of the child who is out of control. And the first sort of instinct is to call the police to try to restrain and get things under control. And that is not what children with mental health problems should have to be experiencing. What we need are interventions that understand the mental health treatment needs of that child and will provide that rather than the criminal justice approach to restraint, which does nothing to help the child in that particular situation. It will take care of the safety issues, but I think that the proponents of the crisis response are making the point that what they need is treatment for these children so that the child can feel safe, the family can feel safe, and that the community can be safe.
Well, and if the police respond, there's really nothing for them to do but hospitalize the child because they're not trained mental health clinicians. If you have a trained team that can come in and help diffuse the situation, they don't just go in and out like the police. That's the other thing. They stick around. They help the family. They help stabilize the entire situation and then bring in whatever resources are necessary to get the family through the next 24 or 48 hours, next couple of weeks. So they're not walking away until the family has the services that they need in place. And I think that's so important, particularly when we look at the statistics for the Commonwealth Center, which is the only remaining state-run psychiatric hospital for children. It's located in Stanton, and it is seeing a huge increase in the number of readmissions. These are kids who are bouncing back to the hospital after they've been there once this year already. They're going home. They're not getting stabilized. They're not getting the treatment that they need at home, and they bounce back to the hospital. One of the great advantages of places that have these crisis response services that they advocate is that not only are you resolving an immediate psychiatric crisis, but you're helping equip the family to deal with the next crisis that comes down the pike. They might be able to sense it coming on earlier. They might know techniques. They might know people to call to help diffuse the situation before it becomes a hospitalization type situation. So you're saving money right now and you're saving money in the future by getting that family out of that cycle of hospitalization.
Christy Gallagher, mother of a 9-year-old child who's been struggling with mental health issues for several years now. When we started talking, Christy, you said something about being in a good place now. So I take it that the treatment that your daughter is currently getting is working.
Yes. Yeah, we have, you know, so many different therapies going on right now, and we feel really blessed. We have,
So what I wanted to ask you is, after everything you've gone through over the past 5 years or more, with the different diagnoses and occasionally some kind of medication working for a while and then something else cropping up and yet another doctor and yet another different diagnosis, with your daughter being in a better place now, do you worry that this is only temporary?
Oh, yes. Oh, definitely. I mean, I think that's the nature of the disease. As she grows and her hormones change and her growth pattern changes, things are going to need to change. Her medications are going to need to change, and she's going to change. Her environment's going to change. She's going to go to middle school. She's going to have...
I know that's something, Christy, you and I have talked about before, is how helpful these crisis services could also be at a time when you're planning for a medication change, because we've talked about how stressful that can be. You try to do them over Christmas break or summer vacation because you know it's going to be unpredictable, your daughter's behavior. And so if you knew that these crisis services were available for you to call whenever you're going through one of those medication changes, that could be incredibly helpful.
Oh, and I think just the nature of being an adolescent.
That's right.
I'm nervous about all of that.
Well, and changes of schools. In fact, my experience is that change is very difficult for children with mental health issues. And so having a safety net available whenever there's a major change is really important and valuable to the family and to the child.
Absolutely. And I think what Christy's situation shows is that when you bring in a variety of treatments to wrap around a family and a child, you can achieve some level of stability, which I think is where you all are right now. But you've gotten some help from schools. You have a psychiatrist. You've got, you know, she has some medication therapy. You've gotten some in-home therapy. There have been a number of different things that have come together. And that's what we really want for all children in Virginia. Tom, I know we've talked about this before. There are as many as 100,000 children in Virginia who suffer from a serious mental health disorder like Christy's daughter. That's a lot of kids.
Christy, when I hear you describe what you've gone through with your daughter, it sounds to me like I'm hearing the voice of a mother who loves her child deeply and sees her child at times in almost unbearable pain and wants to do whatever it is that can be done to help your daughter. But at the same time, you are in a state of fear?
fear and just anxiety myself, I think, not knowing. I think the state of bipolar is you just never know when the next sort of manic or depressive episode is going to be. So
fear for your daughter, fear for the others who are around her, fear for your younger son, fear
right.
for yourself.
Right. And part of the disease also is she's got a lot of social problems. So I worry about how she's doing in school, socially as well as academically. So there's, even though she's doing well now, we're not in the middle of a bunch of temper tantrums or we're not having those sort of daily episodes. We're having to deal with other things like how is school going, how are friendships going, all of that.
I know that you and Margaret Nimmo Crowe from the group Voices for Virginia's Children have spoken before, and this is the first time that you've introduced or been introduced by phone to Charlotte McNulty, the former executive director of the Virginia Office of Comprehensive Services for At-Risk Children and Youth. One of the things that I've heard Charlotte say so often that concerns her in all of her years of work with trying to help people with mental illness, adult and children, is what I've heard Charlotte refer to as simply the stigma issue. And it strikes me that if I just say that much, you may have something to say about it.
I do, but I think the way we've approached it in our family is just to be out and open about it. And we've been out and open with our daughter, and she's out and open about it. And I think the way to approach it is just to say this is what we have, this is in our family, and hopefully by starting young and starting with her at a young age, we're going to break through it. At least our family is. And we, she was hospitalized at a young age. We had to be open about it, and yeah, we face it, but it's
there. Must be times when you have just felt terribly alone, like you were struggling to get help and never expecting to go through this as a parent and not being aware of anybody else who was dealing with what you were dealing with?
Yeah, I joked that I was going to start a blog called People Don't Bring Casseroles to Families with Mental Illness. it's true. I mean, you feel terribly alone.
So the Virginia General Assembly is in session, and part of the reason that Margaret and Charlotte are here is to talk about the recommendations that yet again are before state lawmakers to change or improve services for children. I realize that you've got to go in a moment here, but before you go, Christy Gallagher, give us your best pitch for why you think change needs to be made in the state government's systems for children's mental illness.
Well, I think one of the biggest things is to keep children out of recurring going to the hospital. And also, like I said before, it's the crisis centers are needed so that we can keep the kids while in crisis. Parents don't have to call the police. They have someone they can call. The kids don't have to go back into the hospital all the time, and there's someone there to help them. And it can be of any income level, which I think is really key.
Christy Gallagher from Fairfax speaking to us from her home. Understand that you had the day off from work today because it is President's Day.
Yes, I'm enjoying my children immensely.
Thank you so much for making time for us, Christy.
Thank you.
Here in the Virginia Insight studio, Margaret Nimmo Crowe, Director of Policy at the group Voices for Virginia Children, as well as coordinator of the Children's Campaign for Mental Health, plus Charlotte McNulty, former Executive Director of the Virginia Office of Comprehensive Services for At-Risk Children, as well as a former member of a commission looking at mental health law reform in Virginia. Phone number, if you want to join the conversation, is 888-WMRA-TALK. From Harrisonburg, Nancy, thanks for using that number and calling in. Your question or comment, please.
Well, I have a comment I'd like to inject into the conversation. I am not an expert. I need to mention that right up front. But I am interested in Dr. Peter Bregin, Bregin, his viewpoint. He feels we have gone too far prescribing drugs to treat mental health issues. And if anyone is interested in his writing, he's written quite a few books. One is called Toxic Psychiatry, and he is a Harvard-trained psychiatrist and currently lives in Ithaca, New York.
Nancy, thank you so much for that. And before I ask for the guest to respond, I'm going to ask one of our other callers who's been waiting for quite a while to add in his comment or question, and then you here in the studio, I'll ask for your response. So next we're going to McGackiesville. Kevin, thank you for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment, please.
Yeah, this actually sort of goes along with the previous caller's comment. The bottom line is I support the sort of emergency medical crisis policy as an alternative to police intervention, but the bottom line is if you want to look at mental illness as a political issue, you have to go back to 1970 in West Germany, when patients and doctors in the Heidelberg Psychiatric Clinic formed the Socialist Patients Collective. And they actually made a very sophisticated argument that mental illness was a response to capitalism, to the political conditions that people live in, and that the division between patients and doctors actually is a mechanism of control because the doctors are as mentally ill as the patients. And when they actually tried to implement these sort of policies, patient-directed radical therapy policies that directed people's energy towards radical political change, they were opposed by the administration of this clinic in Heidelberg, and they organized occupations of the clinic and were forcibly removed by the police. So I was just,
Kevin,
I was,
thank you very much for sharing that perspective with us. So Kevin has an idea that much of mental health and mental health treatment is connected to political issues. Nancy has been reading a psychiatrist who says our overall approach is wrong. We're relying too much on medication. Margaret Nimmo Crow and Charlotte McNulty, I would imagine that in your work you run into a wide variety of different theories that at least at first blush may seem kind of far out there.
Well, that's correct. This is Charlotte. But let me just state that as far as I'm concerned, the arguments or the information that has just been mentioned is just further argument for having well-trained child psychiatrists doing the appropriate evaluations for children so that the diagnoses are being done with the proper credentials and therefore the proper medications are given. And the other thing about children is children's physiology changes fairly rapidly over time. So their medication needs are going to change fairly rapidly over time. Another argument for having the appropriately trained physician evaluating and medicating and working with children and families.
Charlotte, when you say appropriately trained, that seems to imply that children are often these days seeing somebody who's not appropriately trained?
Well, because we have such a shortage of child psychiatrists and child pediatric nurse practitioners psychiatrically trained, often general practitioners are seeing children for their mental health needs, or adult psychiatrists are seeing children for their mental health needs. And so,
I think it brings up, I think Christy's example, Christy Gallagher, the mom we were just talking to, is such a good example. Her child is on medication, but that's not the only treatment that she's getting.
That's right.
She has a brain disorder and she's on various medications to treat the disorder she's been diagnosed with. But she also receives therapy. They have an in-home
talk therapy.
They have someone who comes into their home.
Once again, we're right at the point where the break is coming up. So I'm going to ask you, can we continue with that?
Of course.
And we'll also get back to some of the issues of how what you're proposing could save taxpayer money when we continue here on Virginia Insight. Both Charlotte McNulty and Margaret Nimmo Crow have extensive experience with community service boards, the regional agencies that head up government-funded mental health programs at the local level. Ms. McNulty was once executive director of the Harrisonburg-Rockingham CSB. Ms. Nimmo Crow was once chair of the agency that served the Richmond area. My name, by the way, is Tom Graham. This is Virginia Insight. We are talking about what can be done to improve mental health services for children in Virginia, or whether change or improvement is needed. You got thoughts about that? 888-WMRA-TALK is how to reach us by phone. On Facebook, we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. If you're right, Margaret Nimmo Crow, that the kinds of changes that you and Charlotte and so many others in your field have been advocating for years would not only better serve children and families of children with mental health issues, but would over the long term, and as you said, short term in some ways, save money, then why are the changes not being made?
Well, I think if you look in really practical terms, in any given budget year, and we're right smack in the middle of a legislative session right now, it's considered a new initiative because we have not funded it before. So that's an additional hurdle to overcome just in the legislative process, is what we're proposing is considered new, even though we've been proposing it for years. And so that's an additional hurdle to overcome. I'm really happy to report that yesterday, both the House and Senate reported out their budgets, and they each included some funding for children's mental health. It was not as much as we had hoped for. It's certainly not nearly what's needed, but it's a great start, and we appreciate that. The Senate put forward a little over $2 million over the next 2 years to fund the child psychiatry demonstration projects. So that's five additional child psychiatrists in the state who would provide both direct service and training to pediatricians and other general practitioners who are treating kids.
And these would be divided up in different geographic regions.
Exactly.
There are five geographic regions that...
There are, for these purposes. There are five regions of the state, and so each one would get a child psychiatrist. So that's exciting because, as I mentioned before, there is need throughout the state and in every type of region. So that's the funding on the Senate side. On the House side, they proposed $500,000 each year to begin funding these mobile crisis teams, the community-based crisis response services. Again, that's a small amount compared to what's needed, but we're very grateful that they have recognized the need. And again, in a very tight budget year where they spent a lot of the resources that they had at their disposal to restore cuts that were made in the governor's budget, we feel very fortunate that we've been able to secure, hopefully, some new funding to get started on these priorities for kids.
And with the success that I am certain these programs will have, I feel confident that as we move forward, there's a possibility of getting continued funding, if not greater funding, over time.
Absolutely. We want to demonstrate effectiveness. We know that it's there. There are a couple places in the state that already have some crisis services they've developed with local funds, and I want to mention those because I think it's so important to show that they do get the kind of outcomes we're looking for. There's a mobile crisis team in the Lynchburg area that's run by that CSB, and there's a crisis stabilization unit called Leland House in Fairfax that's run in a public-private partnership. They have both achieved an 80% success rate with their kids who are there. And that means that the children have not gone to the hospital or to some higher level of care. They've kept them out of that. They've also, at the same time, reduced their usage of the Commonwealth Center. So they're not hospitalizing as many kids. That's a direct savings to the taxpayers. And that's the point we're trying to make. They're savings immediately when you institute these programs. They're also savings down the line. We know that lots of kids who have untreated mental health conditions end up in jail. They end up in the juvenile justice system and as adults in the criminal justice system. And as taxpayers, we're paying for that. I know that I, as a taxpayer, would certainly rather pay for a child to get the treatment that they need and go on and live a productive life than to have to pay for their bed in a juvenile justice facility. It just seems like such a waste when the underlying problem is a mental health condition that is treatable.
We have this comment from someone on our Facebook page. This is from Matthew, who says, one great improvement for Virginia children would be to vote out the current crop of Republicans. I think that Matthew's probably someone with a predetermined political perspective, but does he raise a fair point in are Republicans more or less likely to support the kind of reform, or are Democrats more or less likely?
You know, I'm actually really glad that he raised this point. We have excellent bipartisan support for our budget amendments. We have both Republicans and Democrats who from the get-go have supported these budget amendments, and I think that's really important for people to understand. Senator Emmett Hanger, who's a Republican, and Senator Janet Howell, who's a Democrat, came together to support these amendments in the Senate and in the House of Delegates. Delegate John O'Bannon, who's a Republican from Henrico, is our lead patron for our budget amendments. So I think that there is a stereotype, but I think that you get legislators on each side who understand the importance of treating children's mental health conditions. You know, Delegate O'Bannon is actually a doctor, and so he understands, I think, maybe more than some other legislators of either party, how important it is to get these services. Another big supporter is Republican Dickie Bell, who has the Commonwealth Center in his district, and he sees firsthand the needs of these children.
Margaret Nimmo Crow is with the group Voices for Virginia's Children. Charlotte McNulty used to head up a state agency called the Office of Comprehensive Services for At-Risk Children and Youth. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Call in phone number 888-WMRA-TALK. In all numbers, that comes out to 888-967-2825. Alta, somewhere just outside of Harrisonburg, thank you for calling in. Your question or comment, please.
Hello, I am Alta, and sorry I have a cold, so my voice is not very good. But I'm a child psychiatrist, and I believe Charlotte would know me. But
I do, Dr. Brubaker.
I am very interested in the program of training training pediatricians. I have been involved with talking about that with the American Academy of Child Psychiatry meetings. But one of the problems that I have found that my biggest problem is in dealing with insurance companies and other things is that doing the paperwork takes up too much of my time. And I find that it takes away from my time with the patient, the time that I could be doing so much more for the patient. And because I have my own psychiatric problems with obsessive compulsive disorder, so paperwork is particularly a problem. But I would like to be able to do things in which we could decrease the paperwork and concentrate on doing our work for the patient.
Charlotte, is this something that you hear?
Well, I was just going to say, this is a problem that I hear from physicians. It was a problem that we certainly encountered at the Community Services Board when I was there as the executive director. Possibly the difference in that situation was we had people who could assist the psychiatrist in doing the paperwork, which Dr. Brubaker would not be able to have in her private practice. But it is an ongoing problem. The paperwork can be daunting for physicians. And working with children and families require a lot of time. It is because you're dealing with a system rather than a person. And so I understand that physicians, pediatricians, child psychiatrists would very much like to have more of their time spent doing that than the paperwork that's required.
Absolutely. And I think some of that paperwork having to do with insurance must be very frustrating. I think there is also an element, though, when we're trying to measure the results of what we're doing, and particularly I think of it at the Community Services Board level, when we're using public funds, we need to be accountable for how we're using them and do a better job than we're currently doing of tracking the outcomes. And I think that's what these two crisis programs I've mentioned in Lynchburg and Fairfax have done a really good job of, is showing the impact that they're having on children and how that's helping the kids move down a level in placement to a lesser restrictive environment and also saving money. And I think that's the kind of information we need to be collecting. And I think that's very important to show what we're doing with public dollars and how we're helping kids, because it's our goal as advocates that we use the public dollars in the best way possible.
Also, thank you so much for taking the time to call us, and good luck getting better quickly from that cold. Margaret Nimmo Crow, in terms of what's needed for children, it seems to me that I've heard other advocates say before that part of the problem, not only in Virginia, but in other places across the country, is there are people who just don't take the challenges of mental illness for children all that seriously. That they see the threat and they see the need primarily with adults. Do you run into some of that kind of perspective that makes it hard to get the improvements that you're looking for kids?
I do. I would say, again, we're right in the middle of the legislature. So what I've been doing a lot is talking to legislators and trying to educate them about children's mental health issues. And for folks who have not worked in the field and are not very familiar with it, there is an amount of education that you have to do to let them know that children really do have serious psychiatric disorders. I know I was trying to explain it to one, and the best way I could think of to do it is these are not kids who are the quote-unquote worried well of children. These are not kids who just have trouble paying attention in class and that's it. These are children who have serious psychiatric diagnoses. The symptoms are very serious for them and their family. They interfere with the way they function at home, the way they function at school, and the way they interact with peers. I think you heard all of that from Christy Gallagher. So there is a certain amount of education about what types of disorders we're talking about, the impact that they have on families and on communities. And so I think that's the biggest piece of the education we try and get across.
Well, and at a practical level, I think that it's very common for people to view the behaviors of children with mental health issues as just being bad, recalcitrant children who need their parents to get them under control. And I think that speaks to the need to educate people about the mental health needs of children. These are not bad children. They are children who are experiencing some very serious symptoms. And they are, as you said, Tom, in significant pain and need some assistance from us rather than our impatience. Well, education goes a long way toward that.
What a perfect example. A mom I just heard from in Williamsburg who has a son with bipolar disorder. Her local mental health officials she was trying to work with to get services for her son were suggesting a behavior chart as if these are behavior problems and she's just being a bad parent. She's like, no, my son has bipolar disorder. That is a mental health condition, a psychiatric disorder, and we can't chart it out with stars. That does not change his behavior. It's out of his control, just like you were talking about, Charlotte. This is not the way he wants to behave. He knows the difference, but he can't control it. A chart is not what we need. We need therapy. We need mental health treatment. And so there is that stigma, even I think within sometimes those who work with kids,
right.
not understanding the seriousness of it. But when it comes to lawmakers, it's definitely education, and I feel like we're getting further. There are more and more legislators every year who understand the seriousness of the problems and that it's going to take some state resources to provide this treatment, but that ultimately it's going to save us dollars in hospitalization. It's going to save us dollars in the juvenile justice system.
So where we're at right now with the two proposals that you, your organization, and other advocates for mental health reform have made, two things that you want. One is crisis services, kind of an experimental program across the state?
Actually, it's not. It seems that way in Virginia just because we're behind the curve and we don't do it. But it's been done in many other places in the country and it's been done very successfully.
So this could be something for every community service board to be running across funding for them?
That's our ultimate goal. Right now, though, we just want to have a pilot in each of the five regions of the state.
So it is a pilot for each of the five. And then also a child psychiatrist who will see some children patients based in each of these five geographic areas that cover all of Virginia.
Exactly.
Those two. Right now, the House has proposed in its budget recommendation $500,000 a year.
Correct.
For the crisis services over 2 years. And the Senate has proposed a little more than $1 million a year for over 2 years. For the psychiatric services for children.
Exactly.
These budget recommendations come out to be between 1/20th and 1/40th of what you and your agency and other advocates had asked
for. Now, when you put it that way, Tom.
So it's tiny compared to what you see as the initial need.
Exactly.
In terms of what happens next in the General Assembly, advocating for at least some of this pilot money for crisis services for children and some of this pilot money for psychiatric services for children. What do you want anybody listening right now to do?
I think that it would be a very good thing to call your legislators or email them and let them know that both of these funding priorities are really important for kids and that they should both be funded in the final budget. You know, we have a long way to go until the session's over. And what comes out in the final budget, there's a lot of negotiation between now and then. And so we will be strongly advocating that both of these projects ought to be funded. Both are very important.
That's right. I was just thinking that this is just the beginning of a process, and there's a lot of negotiating that has to go on between the two sides of the General Assembly to what the final budget is going to look like. like. So we all have opportunities to affect the way our legislators vote, and making those phone calls or sending those emails is a real important way to do it.
And Tom, I would encourage folks to go to the campaign's website. It's oneinfivekids.org. We have a newly revamped website, actually, as of this weekend. So I encourage folks to go on, take a look at what we're doing, and learn what the issues are, specifically what we're advocating for, and they can get in touch with their legislators that way.
Our guests have been Margaret Nimmo Crowe, coordinator of the Children's Campaign for Mental Health, as well as director of policy at Voices for Virginia's Children. Also with us, Charlotte McNulty, former executive director of the Virginia Office of Comprehensive Services for At-Risk Children and Youth. Thank you both for making time for us.
Thank you.
Insight's executive producer is Matt Bingay. Our associate producers are Terry Ward and Bob Levicky. Some of our break music supplied by Robert Jaspe and Inner Rhythm. You can find audio postings of Virginia Insight by going online to WMRA.org, then clicking on programs, and then clicking on Virginia Insight. And if you go to the Virginia Insight page, you'll find links to more information about both of our guests. And if you go to our Facebook page and click like, you'll get access to a whole bunch more information about these broadcasts there as well. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more Insight.